Tonight, we open with a story that forces us to rethink what's possible. Not in theory, but in the moment a life hangs in the balance. Imagine being 13 years old, and for 3 days, you're not fully in your body. You're awake. You're aware. You're watching. You're learning something no one ever taught you. That consciousness isn't locked behind your eyes. That time isn't a straight line. And that one day, this strange, impossible awareness will return when everything you love is on the line. Our guest, David Masters, lived that. A teenage out-of-body ordeal that stretched across 3 days. An encounter with a realm he insists was not the astral, but somewhere deeper. A vision delivered with unsettling clarity. A future accident involving his toddler son. And 20 years later, it happened. The car, the driveway. His child wandering into danger. The scene playing out exactly as foretold, only this time he was ready. Tonight, David Masters walks us through this moment he saw the future and the moment he changed it. This is the Paranormal 360. Hour one begins now. And joining me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, David Masters. David, thank you so much for being here tonight, sir.
What a pleasure and an honor to be with you, Dave.
This is an amazing story. Something that, again, I love the concept of examining consciousness and giving people an actual story that unfolded that shows that what we think we are, we haven't even got the closest grasp of that concept, and that consciousness is more than just a thing in our brain. It's something that seems to be all around us and connected in ways we have no insights to. Take me back to that moment when you're 13 years old. What put you in the state that you were in that this opened up for you?
Well, let's start when I was 3 years old. I had a terrible accident. I had my bicycle. I turned it upside down. I'm pedaling the pedals. And
right.
I lose a finger. I lose a finger. It got stuck between the chain and the gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it started there. I think that what I experienced was a dispensation. I was given something because I lost something. And I think this is somehow the universe. We are all connected in this amazing matrix, let's call it. And I think that each person who's had a certain kind of traumatic experience may have received something to restore them, to give them. Because, see, I wanted, as I was growing up, I wanted to be a guitar player. No way, I couldn't do it. I mean, it wasn't that I couldn't do it, but it wasn't meant for me. Something else was. So there's things that I had to accept about my life from that very early age. And accepting the loss of my finger made me very self-conscious. I couldn't even look at people until I was in my 20s. I couldn't look them in the eye. I thought that they could see that there was something missing about me. Because, you know, when kids would see my finger when I was a kid, they go, "Ooh, what happened to you?" And then I have to tell them the story. But I do think that when we are in a situation such as I experienced, that opens something up for us. And for me, I never felt like a victim. Nothing ever changed for me in terms of being a child. I discovered something very interesting about the loss, and that was these things eventually heal. And so not only did that kind of help me move forward in my life in interesting ways, I wasn't afraid of pain. Like a lot of people are afraid of pain. I wasn't
right.
afraid of adventure. And so I had many experiences in life that literally were life-threatening because I put myself there. But that's because I had lost my fear of pain. And so let's just go to that moment then.
Well, one second, David. I want to bring up something I find really fascinating. You talk about the fact that there's this almost karmic exchange.
Yeah.
And the loss of your finger, something else awakens.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, this sounds like a lot of metaphysical woo-woo. I want to bring you and tether you to a very real fact.
Okay.
Autoimmune issues, right? People are familiar with autoimmune issues. The strangeness of autoimmune is that you could fall out of a tree and break your arm and suddenly develop diabetes. And I know that sounds insane, but it's true. There is this weird awakening. When something happens, something else can be kicked into gear. You could have a horrible cold or an infection and suddenly develop Crohn's disease. And I know you're saying, Dave, this sounds like a stretch. Talk to your doctors.
I totally agree with you.
It's the fact that there is something out there. There is this exchange pattern. Now, you also said something in a way, and please forgive me for a second, kind of contradictory. In one sense, you said you lost this finger and you became introverted and kind of couldn't look at people until you were into your 20s because you were afraid that they could see through you, that they could see there was something missing.
Right.
Yet you said that it didn't really impact or affect you. I would submit that it did, because you pulling into yourself, you having that veil, there was another exchange, right? Because
yes.
You were not as plugged in to the world as many other children might have been at that age, which gave you more introspect, which gave you a chance to develop something that many of us may be born with, but a lot of us are unfamiliar with because we just wash over it and do something else. So it's kind of interesting how in one breath you're like, this deeply impacted me and changed this effect of who I am, and in the next, but it didn't really change who I am. That's a weird dichotomy that we hold within ourselves, isn't it? That we'll see the scar that we have from mental, physical, or whatever issues we've had, and we kind of gloss over it, but the impact is a lot deeper than we give it credit to.
Oh, I think that's a great point. And just maybe clarification,
mm-hmm.
is that in that dispensation, there was a consciousness. So and as you're growing up, you know, there's a self-consciousness that most children have anyway, unless, of course, they're overtly and overly praised and told they can do no wrong. And, you know, the indigo type children. And I think I was an indigo child before there was even a name for it. But a lot of parents, you know, they overly support their children, and then they don't have that self-conscious because they think in some way they're better. I felt that something was missing, but it didn't stop me from being a curious child. It didn't stop me from playing in the dirt. And my mom totally freaked out, by the way. She actually, when she saw my finger, she turned white. And she actually confessed to me that she couldn't see my finger missing until I was 10 years old. So there was this different relationship that developed with my mom, but also as I became more aware of my sense of awkwardness around other people, because I knew that when people would see it, the typical reaction would be, oh, what happened to you? I knew that I walked around with my hand in a fist because I didn't want people to see it. I didn't want to feel different. And yet I was. There's a dichotomy of ideas there, as you mentioned. I knew I was different. I didn't understand how to fit into this ordinary world that I lived in. Now, I'm going to tell you that when I was 10 years old, I decided
Let's hold that for a second. Okay. We do have to take our first break. We'll come back, pick up with David Masters at 10 years old. What develops next for him? And how does this plug into the journey that unfolds before him? This is an amazing story you need to hear. And I'm curious, how many of you have had similar situations? You can email me. Dave@paranormal60.com. That's Dave@paranormal60.com. Share your story. We'll be back with more right here on the Paranormal 360. All right, David Masters, our guest this evening on your home for all things strange and supernatural. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. David Masters had a very extraordinary life, and it continues to this day. But at the age of 3, losing a finger in an accident, something triggered within him. And that's where we will pick up from this point forward. You started to tell me just before the break that another incident unfolds at the age of 10. Please start there.
Well, when I call it the awakening, mm-hmm. because I had decided to go over and see a friend of mine that lived down the street from me. And I walked down the street. But then when I got to my friend's house, I stopped outside and I had the hesitation about going and knocking on the door. And the only way I can describe it is it was like a portal opened up in the middle of my forehead, and I could literally see into the home. And what I saw, I didn't feel comfortable with. It was an uncomfortable feeling. Like there was something there that was prohibitive for me to even go and visit this kid. And that was when it started, in the sense that the intuitive side of me started waking up. So, you know, there was a period of 7 years between the time I lost my finger and me just being an ordinary kid. But I don't think I was ever the same after that, because something had happened and I wasn't able to necessarily identify it. But at that point in time, and I'll never forget this, it's like as if it happened yesterday, something said to me, just don't go in, just go home. I think there was maybe some potential violence going on in the home. I don't remember for sure, but I started to pay attention to my intuition, which is the name of my book, by the way. Pay attention to your intuition, because everybody, and I think people often realize that they should have listened to themselves, right? Why didn't I listen to myself? But what happens that changes the trajectory of your life when you listen to yourself, when something says to you, don't do this or go that way. And it's even like as life goes on. Well, anyway, I was going to say, when I first started driving, there were times where I was going to take an off ramp or go down a certain familiar street, and somebody says to me, don't go down that street. So I just started listening. When you start listening to your intuition, that begins to change everything. And here's the other part of this. I'm going to fast forward. I'm going to jump around a lot because there's a lot of instances that are connecting right now as I'm talking. By the way, best interview I've ever had. You really want to know. Most people go, okay, I got the talking points. When I was about 23 years old, I was going to take a trip. I lived up in Ojai, California, and I was going to go the back roads around Lake Casitas to Santa Barbara for the day. So I jump in my car. I get about a mile down the road, and I have this vision of a terrible accident. But then I pulled over, and I thought, do I really want to find out if that was me? And I said, no. So see, the problem with intuition is that there's no immediate way to verify what it is that you're being shown. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have to take it on faith, right? I mean, I guess it's all the time you have to take it on faith, because if you don't, then you find out and then you say, I should have listened to myself. And it's relationships. It's everything. It's potentially everything. Not everything, but everything, if you know what I mean.
Right. Now that, I want to cover this as we go into hour two, talking about precognition and, you know, the acceptance of it and leaning more into it. But something I'll plant the seed now that we can discuss in a little bit is the fact then, how do we start to separate the negative chatter that we carry within our own selves from intuition, right? Because how many of us, and I think a show of hands on radio is a perfect example, but how many of us, she would never have an interest in me. How many of us is that intuition, or is that self-doubt and destructive nature? How can we start to discern between those? And we'll talk more with our guest.
Love that.
In
love
hour
that
two.
Yeah.
And let's jump back in here. Again, age 10, if you will, and walk us through what that next phase was.
Well, the next phase started happening when I was 11 years old, and I started to become aware of the fear that was still lingering in my immature mind. Fear. Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
Right.
And I realized at that point, 11 years old, I went to bed one night, and the next morning I woke up, because I heard what appeared to be the flapping of wings. I look out I have a big glass window in the back of my room, and I see what appears to be a winged creature. Okay. And I rub my eyes like, what is that? And are you familiar with what a harpy is? I'm sure you are.
Yes.
Okay. It's a bat-winged, half-human, half-bat. And it's outside my window flapping its wings. And I felt the fear, but I had a BB gun next to my bed and I shot a hole through the window. Now my dad comes in because he hears this breaking. It was a, shot a hole in the window, right? He says, "What happened?" I said, "Dad, there was this thing outside my window."
Mm-hmm.
And it was there. And then it disappeared when I shot the window. But my dad didn't chastise me for breaking the window. He said, "It's okay. Don't worry about it." My dad, because my dad was a professional hypnotist, and I was beginning to listen to what he was saying about people being hypnotized and that life having a hypnotic effect on people. People are not only hypnotized, but they're mesmerized. And, you know, if you, you know, the word mesmerized comes from the mesmer, the magician. And he would put people in spells and put people in trances. In a sense, we all exist at some level, some, you know, obviously more than others, but we exist under an influence that we're not aware of. And so what happens when you wake up to that is you begin to be able to see beyond what I call the veil, because there is a veil. There's a thin veil that separates this reality from the next reality. And I began to see it. I think, again, it goes back to the loss of my finger. I think I was given something. I was given, because it's both a blessing and a curse, by the way, to have intuition. Because then you're tormented in a sense like, well, what do I do now? Should I listen or should I not? You actually have choices to make about whether or not you will listen to your intuition.
Boy, there's so much of what you're saying that strikes me and really in an impactful way. Because I think about the fact that, and for people out there that are listening, well, I can't be hypnotized. I can't. I bet you can. And I guarantee you, I'm about to prove it. How many times have you gotten in your car at work and suddenly you're pulling in the driveway at home and have no recollection of that drive home? Because in that moment, your mesmerization, right, your hypnosis began and your brain was in 100 different places. Muscle memory got you from point A to point B and put you there. So there is proof that you can be hypnotized, and willingly you allow your mind to go there. There are so many remarkable things that are around us all the time. You talk about the veil, and when you tell that part of the story, I'm almost thinking there is no veil. The veil is a construct we've created. They're right here. They're in front of us. But we're so distracted by work, by school, by anxieties of, am I going to ask that girl out or that boy out? Am I going to, you know, pass that test today? Am I going to pay the bills? That we miss the magic in front of us. We miss the other things that are right there that maybe aren't as tactile. We're going to take a quick break. David Masters opening our minds tonight as we discuss more precognition right here on the Paranormal 360. I'm sure you've all had those moments, right? Those kind of muscle memory moments of something taking place. And at the end of the day, you think, how did I even do that? I don't remember doing that. And you're yet at that point. So look how often you are not aware of the world around you. Now, David, our guest, was very aware of the things because at a very early age, he was shown how quickly things can change, and in a very brutal way. Losing a finger as a three-year-old child put him into the here and now. For those of you that are also have been out driving in your car and you see the accident unfolding in front of you, an accident that probably took no more than 3 to 5 seconds to occur, how many of you lived a lifetime in that time between recognizing what was coming and the moment it happened? There is something about being acutely aware and being in the moment that allows you to see things and experience things in a way most of us will never pay attention to. So I love those instances when the universe shakes our cage a little bit, David, and they say, look, be aware, be in this moment. And you have been in that moment and have watched some astounding things occur throughout your lifetime. Let's continue our journey, because in this hour, I want to hear about your story and what it did to impact your life and save your son's life. So we've heard about a couple of different points through your time in history, but at 13, something happened to you again that this one kind of took you from the physical form into the greater consciousness and delivered to you a gift. Can we hear about that?
So this was what you would call inexplicable. There's no explanation people that have out of body experiences often say they're just 1 minute they're there in their bed or wherever they are, and the next minute they're out of their body. And, you know, I've studied near-death experiences for the last 40 years, and the near-death experience and the OBE are almost identical, except for one is very extremely caused, and you can identify the cause of it. The other is you can't. You just can't explain why it happened. So, but for me, it did happen at the age of just when I had just turned 13 years old, and I remember waking up, floating above my body, looking down and saying, oh, there I am. Here's the strangest part of it is that there was nothing unusually strange about it. It didn't shock me. I had no emotional reaction to it. I didn't feel displaced. I was just there floating in the corner of my room, watching myself sleep. And from that point, I started to notice that I was not in my body. That's the first thing, whoever I am, whatever I am, just wasn't stuck in that little body down there. And so I got up, I went about my day, I had breakfast, I communicated with whoever was in the situation. I got on the bus, I went to school. I was towed around like I was connected by a string, like a floating balloon. That's how I describe it. And this went on for 3 full days. At the end of the second day, I started to wonder, how long is this going to last? Because I could see the days pass, although it was a timeless experience. I didn't have any sense of time at all, period. But I knew that days were going by. And I thought, is this permanent? Is it going to end? And that was the only thing I can remember thinking. But here's the other thing. I became super aware of my self-consciousness when I was going through that. Mm-hmm. I saw myself communicating with other people. I watched myself. I was an observer of the self that was communicating and interacting with others. And I guess it was the case study of me. Like, I just watched myself and all the things that I was doing and my self-consciousness. And I made a note of it sort of consciously, you know, yeah, I'm really self-conscious. I didn't even realize I was that self-conscious. And then the other thing is that it started to dawn on me that that little person that I was tethered to wasn't me. That me was the observer of the other self. That this was me.
Okay.
And so on the morning of the fourth day, I was awake. I was back in my body. I don't remember going back in. I just remember going, wow, that was weird. And I didn't understand how to even communicate that to anybody. It was something that I actually held on to and kept very close to my chest for a very long time until I began to
understand. Now, let me ask for clarification. You say that this happened over a period of 3 days. Now, in the physical realm where you and I exist right now, it was just one night of sleep?
No, it was 3 actual days.
3 actual days. Were you sick? Where were your family members? How come nobody came to check on David Masters?
No. I got up. I was active in my normal everyday life, but my soul, my spirit was just right here being towed around like a balloon. Okay.
All right. Just, I wanted that clarification in there. So you're in this waking sleep state of being by location, right? Your physical and astral form, if you will, are sharing the same space, but two different realities.
Yes. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We got about 3 minutes left. I want to get to this. So what are the things that you saw and unfolded before you that you were able to bring back?
Well, what I brought back was a moon rock. See, the only thing that it's just an example. When the astronauts, I was just watching this thing on the moon, the astronauts brought back moon rocks.
Mm-hmm.
They brought back samples of what it is they were able to pick up when they were on the moon. And I think that everyone that has an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience brings back a moon rock in that sense, because you can't get it unless you go there.
Right.
Right? So whatever it is that you are given in that space, let me put it to you this way. It's like you're permeated with something. So it gets on you. right? Like if you fall in mud, you get mud on you. But if you fall into another dimension, you get that dimensional residue and comes back with you. Now, what's in that dimensional residue is what is opposite of what it is that's on this, in this plane, on this earth. It is a soul spirit substance, and it gets on you. And I believe it's the basis of intuition, because intuition means knowing without reasoning. So there's no rhyme or reason for it in your logical mind, but in your subconscious mind, where your dreams now speak to you differently. This goes into this next phase of what happened to me many years later. But I was also, by the way, and I was on the Coast to Coast AM show as their favorite dream interpreter. I was given the ability to hear somebody tell a dream and actually totally describe the meaning of it. This is what I got. This is my moon rock.
Wow.
Yeah, it's true.
That's a great gift to be awoken to, right? This exchange, again, is you're having this separation of physical to astral form or conscious form,
right?
And being able to see that both can coexist, both exist, which could explain why you suddenly start thinking of your mom, your dad, your friend, and the phone rings, is because the consciousness is plugged in and already aware that this is coming, that we're in many places at once, but not physically, I guess, altered by the form that we're in. That the consciousness is so much bigger and greater. And if we give it a chance to breathe and exist on its own without needing to compartmentalize it, that's where the magic begins. That's where we start having these experiences, seeing things and bringing back our own moon rocks. That blows my mind too, because one of my biggest moments in my life was this psychic moment of on New Year's Eve, 1988, having a sense every time I was driving friends back and forth home safely, that my mom was in mortal danger. We'll talk about that when we return right after this. Now, we were talking with our guest, David Masters, about self-hypnosis, and I brought up the fact that you can drive and realize you got from point A to point B and not even quite sure how you did it. You don't remember making any of the turns because the consciousness was really in control at that point. The physical form was just doing the baseline driving. And consciousness was able to exist elsewhere. I mentioned, David, that New Year's Eve, 1988, stayed sober, driving home friends after New Year's Eve parties. And every time I passed by my family's house, and again, I'm fully aware, I was awake, I was sober, but I was just a mechanic driving back and forth, right? I was just the automaton driving back and forth to get everybody home. My brain was nowhere. And every time I drove past my street, I had flashes of my mom collapsing. Flashes of my mom being brought out to a car or to the ambulance, flashes of my mom having a medical emergency. And it got so bad that around the third time, fourth time I had that, I drove down my street just to make sure there was no ambulance, nothing looking out of place. And at the end of the night, I felt so inclined to go home instead of hanging out with my friends. I went back home. My mom came out, checked on me. Oh, what's going on? I said, I stayed sober, mom. Everything's fine. I just was driving everybody home. She goes, all right, let me go to the bathroom. I'll come out and have a cigarette and we can talk. And she turned around and dropped into a full grand mal seizure, of which she'd never had before. So I was there to help in my own way, render assistance with
amazing.
My father.
Yeah.
Something brought me into that. But again, it was because in those moments of driving, my brain wasn't focused on driving. It wasn't focused on anything. I was just in a relaxed kind of state, making sure my friends were getting home safely. And I was receiving those messages and I acted on them. And it, you know, may have saved my mom's life. It certainly proved to me that there was something else going on besides what we normally encounter.
So scientists are beginning to realize now that consciousness itself is non-local. And I describe it as, and this is one, I guess maybe one of the reasons I'm so in love with radio is that we are receivers and we are transmitters. And that is kind of the bottom line. This whole thing that we have here is simply designed to pick up on signals and then rebroadcast them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're agents in a matrix. It's essentially what it boils down to. I started having that experience very early in life, but I guess it's a good time to sort of mention what I discovered one night in a dream. I had a dream when I was about, I want to say I'm 35 years old. Again, this is fast forwarding 25, years or more, I dreamed that I ran over my own son, my four-year-old son, with my own car. And I saw the whole scenario unfold in front of my eyes. I pulled up on a hill, like a driveway. It was a driveway. It wasn't a hill, but it was a very steep driveway. And I forgot to put my car in park. And so I went to get out to see my family members that were standing there, because I pulled over to say hello to them. And my car started to swing out backward. And my son is getting out of the back seat, and I ran him over. So I woke up from this dream overwhelmed with grief. It was like I couldn't stop crying. I couldn't stop seeing this in my mind. It's like it was the most shocking dream I've ever had. And I've had some very strange dreams. Maybe it was the most, but there was another one. But I'll continue. So it was unnerving at a soul level. Like, how is it possible that I could even do that? So 3 days later, the exact scenario, the exact every single detail unfolds. There they are. They're standing there by the side of the road. I pull up on the steep driveway. I go to get out of my car. But then, as my son's getting out the back seat, it all flashed in my mind. This was a premonition. And I just simply reached out behind me, because it was a big two-door Cadillac, and I grabbed him and I pulled him into the front seat. Death averted. But it was so clear to me at that moment, this was a life-changing premonition. And because, see, when you are aiming for higher consciousness, it is aware of it. That higher consciousness knows that you're trying to connect to it. And you don't even know why. Just like you just described in your premonition,
mm-hmm.
that you saw your mom, because there's love there. And see, love is a connecting thread. It's a connecting thread to all human experience. So when you're trying to do something bigger than yourself in this life, there's a certain love of human experience and the human race itself. When you're trying to do something bigger than you, is what I want to say.
Beautifully stated, brilliantly said. The love connection, right? And that's why we get that sense. You start thinking of your brother, your sister, a friend, and the phone rings. A text message comes in, an email pops up, because we are in those moments. You know, I heard those moments too, David, when we're just kind of staring off into space, like we're there, but we're not there. We're plucking the imaginary webs of our spidery existence and checking on everybody. And I always thought, well, that's kind of a brilliant, beautiful little point, because we're there, but we're not. We're even aware that we're in the zoned out area. And then we come back and everything's fine. Sometimes we come back with that sense of dread or discomfort, but it does happen, right? I mean, there is that element to the connection. And we should be aware of it. We should be acutely aware of it and try to connect with those moments more often. And I think we're going to dig into that in the next hour with premonitions, precognition. Again, our guest, David Masters, he's written the book, Pay Attention to Your Intuition. We'll have a link for that on today's program guide so you can find it, pick it up, and do me a favor. Don't just read the book. If you like the books, rate and review the books, because that goes a long way to help our guests get seen by a broader and wider audience. Let's share the wealth of knowledge that our guests bring to the show by doing something as simple as taking 5 seconds to rate and review those books. David's story focuses and forces us to sit with a question most people spend their whole lives avoiding. If the future can be seen, can it be altered? And in his case, the answer was an emphatic yes. His son is alive because a message arrived early. But that's just one life, just one vision, one man. But what if the ability isn't rare? What if it's part of our human abilities, our superpowers? In hour two, we're going to push past the personal and into the scientific, the peer-reviewed studies, the meta-analysis, the lab results that traditional science loves to ignore. We're taking precognition and the stunning data showing that thousands of ordinary people have unknowingly tapped into the same ability that saved this child's life. In hour one, We asked, is this real? In hour two, we need to know, what do we do with it? So stick with us. The Paranormal 360 rolls on right after this.